town or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden, exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
And if it's Tuesday, it's Tuesday with Maury, an old man, a young man, and life's greatest lesson. Wait a minute, wrong script, I'm sorry. No, if it's Tuesday, it's Stan Deo. You know, Stan Deo is a great friend of the program, and he's been around a long time. He's earned a lot of respect from many, many people, from everyone in the scientific community. Stan Deo is a great friend, as I said, of the program. StanDeo.com. His book, Cosmic Conspiracy. His lectures on the DVD. Holly's book, Prepared to Dare to Prepare. Prepare to Dare.
Don't forget the
No, I'll say DVD Prepare series. To Dare, because I'm getting ready to. You know, that's right. But before we get to Stan, I just want to say, I was saying before the bottom of the last hour. You know, if we look at today's headlines and we get really jammed up mentally. If you're like me, you get jammed up mentally. You think, my goodness, what do we do? And it's difficult to think clear sometimes. And sometimes you just need to take a walk. Take a walk with your dog. Take a walk if you don't have a dog. Or walk your cat. Although you might get some looks.
Or what about my turtle?
Yeah, your turtle. Who has a turtle as a pet? That's what, you know.
A year ago, coming back from Florida.
We bought a little turtle. Don't go there. Right, right.
And I wasn't turtle one soup. For it. I didn't know. My wife went into the store. She said, just don't come in. I'll be right back.
Yeah.
She brought out a little turtle the size of a quarter. It is now the size of your head. It's huge.
Yeah, well. Okay, you ain't talking to the show. All right. For a lot of reasons. But anyway, folks, Whole Tone's alive. Seriously, you can really feel some. If you're sick and tired of being stressed and overwhelmed and unmotivated, and I'm telling you this as a friend. I believe in this product. If you feel like life is running you instead of you running your life, then you can experience the scientifically proven powers of music therapy with WholeTonesLive.com. They've got a collection of proven music therapy that can help reduce your stress, ease your mind, motivate you. You can get started today. Listen to a free sample of this amazing music that heals and inspires at WholeTonesLive.com. We play it here at the office. We play it in our studio. One of many happy Whole Tones clients had written to us and said, you know, I began playing Whole Tones during my workday, and I did notice an increase in productivity and motivation. The work I was doing seemed much easier and my mind much clearer. Now, we had Michael Terrell on our show. He explained how this music was inspired by the music frequencies of King David. Folks, I urge everyone to go to the website, download a free sample at WholeTonesLive.com, support this broadcast, and go to WholeTonesLive.com. That's WholeTones with a W, W-H-O-L-E, WholeTonesLive.com. I wanted to make sure everyone got that, because what a great product that is. So, Joe, welcome, Stan. Welcome to tonight's broadcast. Got a lot to get into. I sent you an email from somebody with a question. I don't know whether you got it or not. Did you get it?
Yeah, I did get the email.
Okay. I don't know where she got it.
Well, I do know where she got it, but I don't know why she didn't understand what it was about. It was an image showing like it was a forecast of aurora over the North and South Pole. It's part of a government project that NOAA is part of, and they take satellite data and put it through something called swpc.noaa.gov. And I put a link to that image on the show images page. I'm just having trouble with my computer at the moment. It's stuck again. But anyway, on the show image page, you get there, second row, right hand side, is the picture that she, or one of the pictures she sent to me saying, "What is this?" And it's an experimental program that NOAA and NASA and a few other bodies have put together for predicting the strength and visibility of the aurora in both the North and South Poles based upon solar wind data and coronal mass ejections and flares and all that kind of stuff. It's a rather complex model, and I think her name was Pamela, but anyway, that's what it's about. It's part of a really wonderful site if you're interested in solar and geophysics type data. If you look at second row, first image, I took a snap off of the main page of the NOAA site for that, and it just gives you an idea of all the things that they do. And this is just a rather poor illustration of it. There's like something like 75 different links in there for reports on the sun, on flares, on solar wind, proton flux, electron count. I mean, for the guy that's a real junkie on space weather, you know, kind of like me, that's the really go-to site. It's got everything there. So I've put the link up at the top of the image. I didn't hot link it, but you can see it there so that you can dive in and see where she got this image and a lot more. It's quite interesting site. Anyway, that's what that's about. And I guess we've answered that lady's question there, okay?
Very good. All right, so let's start wherever you want to start this week.
Well, some interesting things here. Remember, gosh, it was only one or two shows ago I mentioned about my house guest, my parents' house guest, when they were taking exchange students from Bangkok, Thailand, and they had Dr. Rajanasong's son over there, and I met with him, and he told me about his father's experiment. His father was a medical doctor, and they had experimented years before for in a darkened laboratory where they'd built a glass coffin, in essence, you could see through with air piped in and other things like that. And they'd paid a poor man, paid his family and him to let them watch him die because he was on the verge of passing. And so they wheeled him in, put him in this glass cage, and they wanted to weigh his body and the container there before he died and then weigh it after he died to see if the soul weighed anything. And, you know, I was always fascinated by the story because when the old man died, Dr. Rajanasong and his partner were absolutely astounded because as the man breathed his last breath within a few seconds, a ball of bright light popped out of the guy's chest inside the glass casket, bounced around inside of it, exploded the casket, and was gone. And the man, of course, was dead. This so frightened them that they closed up all the research, wrapped it up, destroyed whatever, and never did it again, and only talked to family members about it. Now, today, in the news on Drudge Report, believe it or not, they record some imaging, you know, photographs taken of what happens when a sperm first fertilizes, first makes contact, and joins with the egg in the human embryo. And it says, at that time, a bright white light, a bright light flashes around the egg. And if you click on that link, you can see the picture of it. And it this happens in humans. And it's they've seen it in animals, but this happens in humans as well, as that bright light does occur. And if you click on the text beneath that where it says flash of light at conception, you can read the science report at the Telegraph in the UK there to see the whole story about it, which I thought was quite fascinating. in light of this story that Dr. Regina Sansan told me. Now, I thought, well, I'll just look and see if the Internet has anything to say about flashes of light at death. And surprise, surprise, I found a lot of them, including George Harrison, the guitarist for the Beatles. And it says when he died, the whole room just, there was a brilliant flash of light as he passed. And this is not a rare report of people dying. They see that flash of light. I think the room probably has to be a little bit lower illumination. I don't think it happens in bright sunlight. But still, it's like you have light at your conception and light at your passing. And let's hope it's brighter at your passing than when you arrive, so that it's an indication of where you're going, to light instead of dark. Just a side thought on that.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
Say again? Can't hear you.
No, it's just interesting. It proves to me the Bible. I mean, science is proving what the Bible said. So that's just my thought.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, this reminds me, when I read that, I'd gotten a phone call yesterday and the day before from a woman. Let's just call her Martha at the moment, just to protect her identity. But Holly and I have both talked to her. And she shared something after listening to your show with me talking about Atlantis and that Prince Solomon guy, that it happened to her back in November of 1984. Now, the woman has had seven sons, and this one of her sons, who was 4 days old, and she was giving birth to him, she was laying on the couch, you know, nursing like new moms do. And suddenly some kind of what she called an experience happened to her. She said it wasn't a dream or a vision, but kind of out of a dead sleep, laying there with her newborn, she was shocked and gasped and woke up because something was revealed to her at that moment, that the Antichrist had just been born. Now, this is in 1984, in late November. Now, she kind of shared that with no one at the time, and eventually told husband and a couple of relatives and a very good friend. And when she heard me talking about this Prince Solomon on the show and the Antichrist, she looked at the picture and she said, well, no, I don't think this could be the Antichrist, because her son was born in 1984 and the Solomon guy was born in 1985. And then she thought about it for a second. She said, oh, wait a minute. Was he born when he popped out, or was he born when the egg was fertilized at the moment of conception? So she counted back 9 months from when Mohammed bin Salman was born, and sure enough, it was in November when she had just given birth and was laying there with her own son. So she experienced the moment of conception of the Antichrist in her spirit at that time, and kept the kind of the secret for 30 years, you know, keeping it to close friends and whatever. But once her friend, her good friend, told her, you know, about what I said as well on the Prince Solomon being the Antichrist and things, she checked it out, and now then she's a firm believer that that's the guy that she saw. To me, having her ring on the morning she did this week, I had been just kind of quietly talking to the Lord about my situation here with the Antichrist, that I've been studying these things, and, you know, could I be so positive that Mohammed bin Salman was going to be the Antichrist? Because that's where I'm moving my thoughts and conclusions based on the evidence I'm digging up, just really point to this young fella. And that for her to ring, and I don't know her from Adam at the time, she rings and starts telling me all the stuff about the dream vision 30 years ago and whatever, I was amazed, because it was almost like the Lord kicked her in the side and said, hey, Martha, go ring this guy and tell him what I showed you, you know, in 1984. And she was excited. I was excited. We were all excited, and still are, because it's a confirmation of both of us about this guy. And the more information I do find, as I said, I am very convinced that Prince Mohammed bin Salman of Saudi Arabia is the Antichrist of this age. He is the Mabus, the MBS with the ANU vowels in it that Nostradamus predicted. One of the things I found, by the way, in Nostradamus, when I was checking to see if his identity of the Antichrist being Mabus had any validity, there was a in that the Mabas spoken of by Nostradamus would start a year of 25 years of war. And true to his form, Nostradamus encodes things. It was 2-5, and you add them together and you get 7 years of war. So this is Nostradamus talking about the tribulation with MBS. And as I said the other day, they call Mohammed bin Salman in the royal court. They refer, and in the newspapers there, they call him MBS instead of MBN, which is the guy that's going to take over the throne from his father, Mohammed bin Nayef. So, okay, now this lady said to me, Martha, she says, you know, think about this. Jesus started his ministry when he was 30 years old. And, of course, John the Baptist was his cousin and a forerunner. John the Baptist was rebuking people and he was saying to them, make pathway of Israel straight in the desert, Israel, Israel. And so he was rebuking people and warning the children of Israel to forget their idolatry and, you know, come to the Messiah when he arrives. Now then, Mohammed bin Salman, Prince Salman, is starting his ministry already. He's just turned, he'll turn 31 in August of this year, I believe it is. And he has started his ministry, in essence, as a representative of the dark trinity of Satan and the false prophet and himself. I'm pretty sure this is the guy. I could be wrong, but I don't think that there are any other young potential candidates for the Antichrist in the collection we've put up on the website and that we've talked about before. But this young prince is going to start doing things like, I'll bet he'll be using technology eventually here in the next year or two to bring down fire from the heavens in the sight of mankind, as it says the Antichrist will do. Now, I think he will do that with the help of the fallen ones who have advanced technology and who have a base or more based in Saudi Arabia near Riyadh in the Jabal Tuwaik mountain range, again, which we've discussed before. So I'm just saying that, you know, from flashes of light at birth and conception, flashes of light at death, and then to this woman's flash as she was laying next to her son when the potential Antichrist was born, does point to Mohammed bin Salman. So thank you, Martha. We know your real name, but I'm just protecting you so that, you know, nobody hassles you about what you're sharing. And thank you for doing that. The rise in interest, in Saudi Arabia and this young prince is enormous. If you read the press, Mohammed bin Salman is being kind of marketed as the rising star of Saudi Arabia. His cousin is going to be the new king. It doesn't even have as much power, and won't have as much power as this young prince does now. He has so many portfolios that his cousin, Mohammed bin Nayef, who will be the new king, wouldn't dare, you know, try to depose him or take the ministries away from him because he is so popular, this Mohammed bin Salman, that he is like the new Solomon of this age, just as we've talked about the Antichrist will be, some kind of a Solomon. He's going to reorganize, to change, like Obama, he's going to change Saudi Arabia. He wants to move Saudi Arabia away from the oil dollar and dependence on oil. So he's put up a large chunk of Aramco, the American Arab oil company, to the tune of about $2 trillion. He wants to sell that off and use that money to take Saudi Arabia in a different direction to have its income and, you know, its spot in the world. Now, I started looking at some other news story when I heard this, and up popped the thing on the Google News. Banks said to market $850 million loan for Dubai to build the Atlantis Resort. Well, that's interesting. Why would they call that Atlantis Resort when I'm telling them that that's very close to where even the capital island of Atlantis was? Do they already know that Saudi Arabia and the area around the Persian Gulf there was originally Atlantis? If so, who told them? Was it the fallen ones that we've been dealing with over there in the Jabal Tuwaik mountain range? Or was it some other logic that led him to that conclusion. I mean, the sands of Saudi Arabia and the empty quarter at the Rub al-Khali down the southern part of the Saudi Peninsula, all those are a mystery. I mean, they're covered in sand and mud in some places. So what's underneath it? What was buried there? This is the last lost civilization that's buried under there, and that, I'm sure, is Atlantis. And I'm paying particular attention in my news watch for anything mentioning the name Atlantis related to Saudi Arabia. So there's one. Then another one came up, and it was for a group who'd been granted in 2012 drilling and mining rights by Saudi Arabia and by Sudan, I think it was, to mine an area, a deep area, of the Red Sea, about 115 miles out to shore, or out to sea from Jeddah in Saudi Arabia. And this mine and this project are called the Atlantis Deep Project. Now, why? Why did they name that the Atlantis Project? I started researching that area of Saudi Arabia, and I found out that one of the largest ancient gold and copper and silver mining operations in the ancient world at around 3000 BC took place in this area. In 1 year, with their testing and stuff they've done, they reckon they can take 1 million ounces of gold a year out of the Atlantis deep, which is the offshore version of what is on land and had been mined for many generations, you know, many centuries, in fact. So I thought, well, this is interesting. This is on the west coast of ancient Atlantis. So I get back into Plato, and I start looking at Plato's account of this malleable, you know, metal that they could pound and beat around stone so they could pave the stones of the capital of Atlantis with this metal coating the stones, and they could coat the whole seawall around Atlantis with this metal so it could be seen from way out to sea when the sun shone on it as a reddish gold glow. Now, what would that have been? People have argued about what this metal was really. It was called orichalcum in the Greek. We know that the Greek word kalkos for calcum is copper, and the translation of it says mountain copper. Well, mountain copper may be a misnomer in essence, because there's a chart that shows you the different alloys of gold. Gold with copper, gold with silver, and gold with zinc and tin, and what colors these things are and what physical characteristics would allow them, you know, where they'd be easy to pound out and surround rock and stuff with it. And the only ones that work are in the gold and copper range, where you have around 80 to 95% gold with 5 to as much as 25% or 20% copper. It makes the gold very rose colored, like the Indians in Asia sell rose gold. It's an alloy of gold. And very pretty, and it's only about 18 carat, but still very, very nice, and you can work it. So I thought, all right, well, let's go back over to the mines on the west coast of Jeddah, or of Arabia there at Jeddah, and go inland a bit. And let's see if that mine has the essential ingredients occurring naturally to have an alloy of gold to be mined there. And sure enough, you have gold, you have silver, you have copper, and gold and copper are the majority minerals found in that area. Now, the fact that the Plato account says orichalcum, like mountain gold, may simply mean nothing more than it was gold of the copper mountain that they dealt with that had this nice hue, because they were trying to figure out what Solon heard from the priests of Egypt at Sais when they said orichalcum was, you know, a malleable metal. It produced a red glow in the sunset. Okay. It did not decay. It did not rust. So that means it wasn't highly copperized, because you would have had copper sulfates form. It had to be something that was a very stable metal, and that would have been predominantly gold with the copper influence. So, okay, orichalcum. Those elements were mined in great quantity on the western side of Saudi Arabia. Again, kind of underlying the fact that was ancient Atlantis. Another little clue popped up reading Nostradamus again in a kind of sideways reference to the physical appearance of the Antichrist, of his garb. And he's going to be known as the one wearing the blue fez, F-E-Z, or the blue turban, or the blue headpiece. I have found, and I've got it there in the third row on the right-hand side, the rightmost picture, a photograph, a recent one, taken of Prince Solomon. Instead of wearing the traditional black rope around his napkin, that, you know, that little square thing they put on his head, looks like a tablecloth. If you look at him in the fourth row, first picture, you see it's black. But in this picture, I even took it into Photoshop and analyzed it, that is a dark cobalt blue rope around the top of his tablecloth that he wears in his head. I forget what they call it, but it is a blue headdress, and it might well be what in code Nostradamus is saying about the Antichrist wearing a blue fez or headdress. So, how does that sound so far?
Interesting indeed, Stan. I mean, it's interesting on a number of levels. Yeah, I do believe, from my point of view, that the Antichrist is alive and walking around and probably of that age.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll stop there.
Holly and I have talked about this. You don't want to just hold back and say nothing. And I think it's our duty to do what we can to be able to recognize this guy when he comes to the forefront. Because if we don't, we might well be fooled as well if we were here to be part of his world kingdom or whatever, or subjects of it. It might be a bit risky, you know, for people revealing, but that's what you get in war. We're in war against the darkness. And we thought maybe that's why I slipped on a stairwell I've gone down zillions of times in the last 16 years, but about 9 days ago, I got up to go check something on the computer downstairs, and it's a carpeted stairwell, and I stepped somehow in a manner I've never stepped before, my right heel, and it slipped, and I slipped into the air, fell on my back and my left side, broke blood vessels everywhere, and in the right foot, absolutely clobbered me, you know, rolling down the stairwell. Was it, you know, because I'm announcing that this guy, Ben Salman, is the Antichrist, or the forces of darkness trying to put us off course there? And there are other little things which don't need to cover, but that have been afflicting us here, and we were wondering why, and this may be it. So for you and the listeners of the program, I surely hope that you are taking notes or recording this so that we at least have a record of what I'm sharing with you each week or every other week sometimes about this guy and how he fits the bill. And about the others, you know, Erdogan and Assad and Obama, they have some characteristics, but not as many as this young fellow does here. So record these things so that when we lose the internet or free access to news, you at least have this information to compare to current events and see if this guy or one of the other four or five in there on the list are the Antichrist. Now, I think this guy, Mohammed bin Salman, will be assisted by the Pope, the Vatican, in forming a new world religion and in forming a new world order politically. I think the Pope will endorse this young fella for several reasons. One, we are pretty sure that Saudi Arabia was behind the terrorists that took down the towers in New York, in 9/11. Now, if that comes out, the Saudis are going to be really angry with our government for revealing that information, which they are promising to do imminently. And the what it tells us is that if the Saudis were responsible for funding the ISIS-type terror across the planet, they could also be responsible, since they're intimately connected with them, for drying up their funding and getting rid of them and becoming heroes of the world by having defeated the ISIS idea and organization all across the world. And everyone will take a deep breath and be at peace and say, peace, peace, etc. Now, the Vatican, I think, will support him when he does that. And so so will Israel and a lot of other nations. It might be a surprise, because he has done the impossible in removing, or apparently removing, terrorism from the earth. But I also recall the scripture that says, when they cry peace, peace, and security, that sudden destruction will be upon them. And that may happen just shortly after he has apparently brought peace.
Interesting.
So let's keep an eye on that guy. I think I think we're onto something here and should share that with people widespread. You know, this is a crazy thing, too. When I fell down the stairs, it bruised my right foot so badly the whole foot was blue. And then after a few days, the blue started to turn to, you know, red and yellow, all that kind of stuff. But three toes out of my 10 toes, three toes were black. Now, it reminded me of the three countries that the Antichrist will overthrow when he takes over. There'll be 10 regions of the world, and I suspect the United States will be one of them, because we have such a high Christian and Jewish content that we'll be a thorn in his side. And so that probably tells us, as even the Hopis say, that a Middle Eastern country will join with Russia and China to invade and destroy America as we know it today. All these little bits and pieces of stuff are floating around out there, and you can kind of pull them together and see, you know, the picture forming around this guy. At least I see it that way anyway. What's your thought?
Go ahead.
No, we're definitely in the time of the latter days, where the Antichrist system is being laid out, and it will be prepared for him when he arrives on the scene. And regardless if it's somebody that you named in from Saudi Arabia, or we find that he comes from another area and is somebody we didn't expect, regardless, the world is being prepared as it was before the days of Noah and the land of Shinar. Everybody's being given of one language and of one mind, and evil is definitely much more prevalent than righteousness, let alone just being good. And yeah, I mean, he is coming to a world that will be prepared for him. And
conditions are right now for the appearance of the false prophet and the Antichrist. And I think it might have to get a little bit darker and deeper and darker. The darkness might have to get deeper. Or what he said. Anyway, yes.
Guys, your mic is cutting out. I can hardly hear you.
Okay.
Are you there?
Yeah,
we're here.
I'm not sure what's going on with that. Isn't that interesting, the topic being the Antichrist? And our mic cuts out. Okay. All right.
Yes. Okay, you're coming back now. I hear you.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
Sorry, go on. Sorry.
No. To me, I think the level of deception that will be associated with the Antichrist will be so great that this is what I picture in my mind, Stan. I picture someone of really good repute, a reputation, stellar reputation, saying, "Hey, that's the Antichrist, for crying out loud. Believe me when I tell you this." And people not believing that person. That is to say, the deception will be so great that and the suave nature of this perverse and Antichrist man is such that there will be many casualties, many spiritual casualties, for lack of discernment and preparation. That's what I believe. As to who it might be, I'm kind of thinking, Stan, that it might be someone that we would never think. But my question to you, but with respect to Solomon, how could he possibly? And I'm just trying to work this out in my head, because he would have to have, would he not have to have the backing of the Christians in America? To a large extent, to rise to that level?
Well, yes and no. If we're one of the three regions that he overthrows because he doesn't get along with us or doesn't approve of us, then no, he wouldn't have to get along.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I'm looking through this from an analytical point of view. So this, again, is a discussion that's of intellectual fodder. It's not, you know, so I'm asking questions because I don't know. Yeah, okay. Well, you certainly have done a lot of work. I could tell you that.
Well, there are still other candidates there, but as I say, when you start adding up the points given to, you know, what things they fulfill as far as the description of the Antichrist and the events surrounding his arrival, you know, that's how I'm scoring at the moment. I can't get Prince Charles on there too much. I don't see that happening. And King of Spain, no. And Obama certainly doesn't fit enough of it to be considered. So there are a lot
you
of
know,
things
you,
that...
You, sorry, Stan, you brought up, yeah, you brought up Prince Charles, and an author by the name of Cohen wrote a book called The Antichrist and a Cup of Tea, and tracing the lineage back to Prince William, or Prince Charles. However, if you go to Prince William, for example, and look at the lineage, the fictitious Merovingian bloodline that is so prevalent, you know, amongst talk of the Antichrist, or at least the Illuminati as it relates to the Antichrist, you could see where Diana of Windsor marrying Prince Charles would have kind of solidified the lineage of a potential Antichrist. For someone to point to William, for example, and say, well, you know, because he had a head wound when he was young and such, but to say, you know, he's the culmination of all of the bloodlines that includes that of Jesus, who had offspring and wasn't. I mean, you'd have to believe this huge lie, of course, backed by scientific DNA evidence. I believe science is. I guess I said all that to say this. I believe science is going to play a role in this too, to prove that we have had our Messiah walking amongst us. I want to say this tactfully. We've had the Messiah walking amongst us all along, and it had to be pointed out to the unwashed masses by the false prophet. I don't know if that makes sense, but and it would rely a lot on DNA and lineage, tracing back to our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, which would be based on a lie, of course. I don't know if that plays into your investigative research and investigation into this.
Well, a bit. I'm still struggling with things like, does the prophecy talk about the head wound? Is it the head wound to the Antichrist or to the organization that is behind him? You know, is it a physical death of that, or is it the death of the Vatican in the mid-1700s that's now revived? You know, there are so many things that can be taken two ways or three ways. That's why I make charts like it I put up on the website to kind of help me lay out the positive indicators as best we can and say, well, now, you know, was it a head wound or was it a wound to the head of the organization, blah, blah, blah. Otherwise, it's just so much information to put in one brain that you wonder that anybody could figure it out.
You're right, right. And folks, isn't this great? I just love this kind of discussion because, to me, this is really what it's all about. Isn't this what we should be talking about, as opposed to the theatrics of an election that may or may not have any consequence to our future, immediate future, or at least the real future? Certainly, we know that the presidency is a mere placeholder for the powers that are behind the veil, and the powers behind the veil are the very people, the antichristical spirits that we're talking about, the Luciferian, the globalists. So this all makes sense, especially if you're talking about it on a primary Tuesday.
Hey, did you see where the Koreans have put up another satellite now, a KMS-4 over the top of the United States at about 300 miles, you know, the magic altitude for EMP attack?
You know, I took out my rifle. I was trying to shoot it down, and I couldn't do it. So, yes.
Good luck.
Yeah, what's up with that? I mean, what's up with that?
Well, it's either, you know, North Korea saying, we can get you, be afraid of us, or, you know, look how great I am for, you know, whatever purposes he's building his ego. Or it may be really in place to strike the United States and make an invasion from foreign sources more likely to succeed. I don't know.
How in the world do we... Seriously, how do we allow this to happen? This is crazy.
It's international law, Doug. I mean, how can they get up there? How can any one country get up there and wipe out somebody else's satellite? It's the international law that they're dealing with.
Yeah, I guess. But to me, it should have never been allowed to get to this point, I suppose. I look at this. How did North Korea, the most backward country on the globe, basically, how are they able to do this? Where was our CIA? Where was our where were our defenses? I don't want to be asking those questions in the dark.
You're assuming or making something here for this part of the discussion that our government really would like to defend the United States and keep it working. But we know that's not the case, hey?
Good point. Touche.
They're setting us up to take us down. And this administration has removed so many of our defenses and so crippled our economy and so demoralized the country that we're ready for an attack that will succeed. We need to get this guy out of there and his whole party.
Yeah.
Yes, we do.
Okay. Well, your take on this, I mean, man, I know we ask this. We go round and round and talk about this all the time, but I just have a real bad feeling instinctually about the elections, the nomination process on the RNC side and the Democratic side as well, but... you see anything going on here, you know, with this? I mean, should we be concerned? Could something happen legitimately now?
I think 2016, as I said last year, is going to be a pivotal year in the prophetic calendar, which to me indicates that we're going to have problems politically, economically, war-wise, disease-wise. All these things are going to start appearing between now and the end of the year as serious fulfillment of prophecy, or the beginning of it, because it's going to continue for several years after that. So, yeah, okay. I think we should be concerned, and I think people should... read European news sources and Australian news sources outside the United States, because you're not always going to get, you know, unfiltered news here on the major networks, and even Fox News is censored to a bit. So things are going to happen, and, you know, look for things that could bring us down, you know, the collapse of the U.S. dollar, switching from the U.S. dollar being the oil dollar to the Chinese yuan, or to switching of the world economy to a gold standard, you know, for countries that got lots of gold. Prince Salman in Saudi Arabia. Watch Saudi Arabia itself and its reaction to the release of the 9/11 blame game in Washington. That's just really trying to give Saudi Arabia the reason to be nasty economically, militarily, whatever else, the United States, if they're being blamed for 9/11, whether rightly or wrongly. But you can see that if this is coming from the White House, you don't want to trust it right now. What's that move mean? Why are they doing that?
Chess at three levels. Yes, chess at multiple levels. Everything might not be as it appears. And we have
that's true.
Stan, I got to ask you this question. You can answer it any time in the next between now and the end of the hour. But if I don't, I'm pretty sure there's going to be people storming the studio. Okay, it's about the magnetosphere. There's so many people asking about that magnetosphere going down for a couple of hours, pole shift. So just keep that in the back of your mind. Answer it at will.
You know, okay, the sound is dropping out again. I think you were talking about the article that said the magnetosphere failed for 2 hours. Is that the one?
That's the one, yes, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We've got pitchforks and torches at our door, studio door.
Okay, well, look, I got several notices of that, questions about that from listeners and from friends, that some friends even that used to work at JPL, saying, what do you think about it? And so I did the first thing, was to go look at the source of the information, to go look at the photos they put up for the alleged depletion or weakening or disappearing of our one type of magnetic field report and shown that with all the little field lines and everything as normal. And then when you went to the other one showing the field lines disappeared, if you zoom those pictures up, you'll see they're not even the same report. They're not even based on the same type of information. One is on the density of field in cubic whatevers, and the other was, you know, field lines in the beta values, what are being plotted. There, it's like comparing eggs and concrete bricks on two graphs saying, oh, look, there's no concrete blocks on the egg, you know, plot. I mean, it's total mathematical nonsense. So whoever did that, either intentionally or otherwise, misled a lot of people. That's not what happened. The magnetic field was normal. They just had bad information there.
Now that, ladies and gentlemen, is from a scientist that you can trust and take to the bank, okay? Now put the pitchforks and torches down and back slowly away from the studio door. Go ahead.
I'm just seeing here. I think I kept that article. I did. Yes, I did. While we're chatting here just a couple minutes, I'm going to throw that up on the show images page because it does explain what I'm talking about. You know, I compare the two images they had in the report so that people can get to the truth of the matter here. Did you see that article also that the Indiana man got sued by a burglar that broke into his garage and he shot the guy in the arm and he got sued and the police locked the homeowner up for 60 days for reckless endangerment when he shot the burglar? Did you see that?
Yes, and that's why I always go for center mass or the head. But that's just
yeah.
me.
Yeah, well, this guy was stupid because he did this after the guy was running down the street and all of his property. I mean, he has no defense when he does that. It reminds Holly and I both of the thing that happened down in Australia while we were down there near our farm. You know, the baker in the little town nearby, he'd bake his donuts and bread overnight, and he'd vent the fumes of the ovens outside. And he came in one morning, and he found a burglar there with his leg cut from the glass in the skylight above the top of the shop where he'd broken in, and he was getting through it, and he fell, and he cut an artery in his leg, and he had it bandaged up, and he couldn't move, and so he got arrested for, you know, being a burglar. And police looked at the shop owner and said, well, look, the guy is suing you, and he's suing you because you vented all those nice smells out into the street, and it made him so hungry he went crazy, climbed up on top of your bakery, broke the skylight window, dropped down inside to, well, steal bread, you know, instead of your money. And so, therefore, he's suing you. And he won. The burglar won the case and a damage assessment against the guy. I mean, what kind of madness is that?
It's maddening, and we see it. We know. I'm biting my tongue, Stan. I'm just biting my tongue.
There's no logic or reason behind it. I mean, that alone speaks volumes.
Well, yeah. You know, at what point does this society, at what point do we say, you know, this is enough. This whole thing is enough. I mean, even back, I happened to pick up a book, and this is kind of off topic a little bit, but by James Tagg, who was really the third person wounded in Dealey Plaza. He got hit by a piece of concrete from an errant shot at the Kennedy assassination. Malcolm Wallace was convicted of murder back in the 50s, and he was reportedly associated with the Kennedy assassination. I'm not going to get into it, but the bottom line is this. Even back then, a jury convicted Wallace of premeditated murder, but the judge basically gave him a slap on the wrist, let him out on his own recognizance. He didn't serve any jail time. This is back in the 1950s, and people can search it up. Malcolm Wallace, look it up. But he was a friend of Lyndon Johnson's, a confidant of Lyndon Johnson's. And I said that because, all of this, Stan, all of this, we need jury nullification. We need civil disobedience when it comes to this kind of horse crap that's out there with respect to this, hey, I'm suing you because I was breaking in and you shot me, doggone it. I understand the ridiculous nature of shooting someone as they're fleeing. However.
Yeah, I understand. Now listen, I've got it up on the show images page. Now go to back to show images, top row, middle picture, to answer the question about the difference between these magnetic field things.
Okay.
And
there it is, either. Folks. By a scientist, a respected, renowned scientist. If that doesn't answer your questions, quell your fears, I don't know what will.
Well, as I said, you can see there by pulling up the little tiny things, the equations they use in that. I put those after the letters IE, and you know you got cubic meters. You got it looks like the log of cubic centimeters, and you know micro amperes or whatever. Look, it's just they're two totally different equations. Displayed there. The one on the right is, you know, quite commonly used to show the magnetic field variations when the solar wind hits our magnetopause and bends around the Earth. But this one on the left has, you know, it's from data from three satellites. It goes 13, 14, and 15. And it's a plot, you know, X and Y, whereas on the other one it's X and Z. Totally different plot lines and totally different meanings of the color and pattern. So unless someone can show me a reason I've got to accept those things as indicating zero magnetic field on the left versus what's on the right, I'm sticking with my decision. That's just bad information.
And we will stick with you based on your knowledge of this stuff. It's all... I kind of know what I'm looking at. I can see what you're saying. And what you're saying sounds logical. If I was sitting on a jury, I'd have to say, you know, okay, I see what you're saying here. And
it's like saying, I was saying a while ago, you know, if the left can say, like, on the hardness of boiled eggs on the right versus the hardness of concrete, they have no relationship with each other. That's the kind of graphs we're looking at. Anyway, and besides that, look, when we've had solar wind and solar flares hit the planet, I have watched it move the magnetic north of our planet maybe 20 to 22 degrees off kilter for several hours. And one of those times is when the solar wind or the flares and the CME and stuff caused such a dump of electricity into our magnetic field that it caused fires in Canada off of the power lines. Well, okay. Did we see anything at all, deviations in the compass or anything extraordinary in our magnetic field during those 2 hours? No. I mean, you've heard about it from aircraft, airlines, you know, all kinds of people that use the magnetic field constancy. So, but anyway, you can look this up. Just scan on the Google for Batrus, B-A-T-S-R-U-S, Batrus is the abbreviation for the organization that's doing these analyses, and they're good analyses if you use them correctly. So, anyway.
No relation to Batrus Ghali. Never mind.
No.
I'm just kidding. Being silly. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I figured it would go that way, but yeah. No, that's it, and I hope that answers people's questions about that and puts their worries to rest.
All right. Fantastic.
Just look at the details.
Fantastic. Well, and
I think that's
great
all
week,
I've got for you this week.
Well, you're right on time.
Yeah.
We're at the end of the program, Stan.
Plan that just right, brother. That's good.
Well, if I could do that with my lectures, I'd be probably liked a lot better by the organizers. I'll usually run over 30 minutes.
But I would. I'll tell you what. They should pay you extra for that because it's well worth the time spent, and that's not false flattery. That's merely saying that the information you provide is fantastic. And that brings me to the point. Go to standale.com and order his lectures. They are really fantastic.
The Garden of Eden series. Yeah. You can. I mean, there's so much there.
Yeah, absolutely. But we want to thank you for your time tonight and spending it with us, and thank Holly for sharing you with us, and God bless you, my friend.
God bless you guys. Take care, and I'll thank Holly for you. Bye-bye
right.
Now.
Good night.
Till next week. Have a nice night, Dan. Tomorrow, we will be back. Pastor Langford is going to be joining us. Flip Benham is going to be joining us. John Robertson is going to be joining us.
We're moving open license
Billy
to
Crone
Thursday.
Yeah, will be joining us. A few others. As we're going to have a round table of pastors tomorrow, open lines Thursday. See you back here tomorrow.
And don't forget, help the Bundys. Help the Bundys. Help the Bundys. Help the Bundys.
Radio Network. The Genesis Communications Network.